Hello to everyone. This is Lena Live, and I am introducing my very special guest today. Her name is Dr. Cynthia Green. We will discuss the issue which I would say central of universe is the life of our brain. And I like to introduce Dr. Green to our discussion because she is absolutely outstanding scientist leading in brain life and research area. And I personally was looking very much forward to speak with her because of the indeed memory issue, which has so many aspects. It's truly endless spiritual organ, as I call it. And I found that Dr. Green is showing tremendous understanding of it from the scientific and also intuitive point of view. My pleasure and my welcome to Dr. Cynthia Green. How are you? And
I'm good.
I would just jump into the question. How about us perhaps talk about you coming to this area of memory with some attachment to 30 days to total brain health and work, which is one of the most valuable book today regarding this subject?
Well, first, thank you, Lena, and thank you to your listeners for having me and allowing me to join you. It's my absolute pleasure. And that's a wonderful question because I think that, you know, the field of brain health may seem relatively new to many people, but in fact, the area of brain health is one that has been the subject of much research and the focus of study for decades. And I first entered the field by training in psychology. I'm a clinical psychologist. And very early in my training, I became interested in the workings of the brain, and particularly in the area of dementia, and how we could distinguish between what we call normal aging, the kinds of changes that we may experience just simply as we grow older, versus the kinds of changes that were more significant and kind of more symptoms of disease, such as Alzheimer's disease. And I began to work at Mount Sinai Medical Center, New York, in the Alzheimer's Disease Research Center, where I was very lucky to be mentored by some very fine researchers and scientists in the field. However, over time, I also became very interested in what we could do to keep our brains healthy. So not only in looking at and focusing on the processes of disease of memory, but in looking at what we might be able to do to preserve our independence and vitality by learning how to remember more effectively day to day, as well as making choices in our everyday lifestyle that would lower our risk for dementia. And so most of the work I do now, including the 30 Days to Total Brain Health program, which you just mentioned, and I'm happy to talk about further, really focus on teaching people what they can do, what choices they can make, and what steps they can take to, number one, improve how well they function day to day, how well they remember things like errands they have to run or conversations that they've had or names that they have to remember, and also what we can do in terms of our lifestyle to promote better brain health. So what we can do in terms of managing our sleep or our diet to improve the health of our brain, and also in terms of those behaviors, choices that we can make that can potentially lower our risk for memory impairment.
This is such a wonderful and a very comprehensive, not only observation, but a truly understanding of the mechanism of memory. I'd like to, and also thank you that you mentioned your credentials. I know that you've been a student of Smith College, and then, as you mentioned already, you're a clinical psychologist at NYU. But I also would add to it that you are a member of a Society for Aging Geriatric Society. So I would say that you really covered all levels of people's development, dynamic of aging, and also how memory can have its own longevity. I hope you would not mind if I will make this conversation a little bit perhaps kaleidoscopic and jumping with the memory issue to other aspects, not only with aging people, but actually with the young people who are involved in the different professions and highly rely on their memories. I personally was almost magnetized by your research because I immediately related this to the performing arts. And dealing with the psychology of the performance, I need to tell you and thank you that you really brought some wonderful connection in between scientific understanding of memory mechanism in the connection with emotional and spiritual performance. So I like to ask you somewhat not directly relating a question to your book, but question which has to do with a different manifestation of memory performance for performing art people. I will be more specific. For example, a young person would have a very, very traditional, I would say, fear of a memory sleeps. And that fear of memory sleeps can create such a panic that even very gifted performer would be afraid to go on the stage and perform. So I personally, I would use perhaps a little bit stronger verb attacking this issue from different angles. It's a physical memory, the way piece feels. It's a general emotional memory relationship with a particular artistic performance. And I wanted to ask you if you agree, and also to give deeper justification, how different components of the memory helping each other.
I mean, I think it's a wonderful example. And, you know, first of all, it points to the fact that having problems with our memory is not something that only happens to us as we grow older. And I often find that I have to joke with my audiences to give them examples because we become so worried about our memory with age. But in fact, I have teenagers, and I can tell you that they don't have perfect memory, right? There's plenty of things that they forget. So it's not only a matter of age. And you bring up the example of what I would call, kind of colloquially is called here in this country, stage fright. So where there's a fear of forgetting the information by going on stage, or that the kind of idea about having to go out and perform the information, even though if it's well learned, in front of an audience, becomes very difficult and even can cause what we term amnestic experience, where the information is forgotten for that period of time. And so one of the things that I can say about it is one of the ways of understanding what happens is that when we talk about lifestyle factors that interfere with memory, one of the factors that commonly can interfere with our ability to remember something, even if we know it, is anxiety. And so if we look at the research on the relationship between anxiety and memory, we see that it's really a bell-shaped curve, so that we need to feel a little anxious in order to perform, right? Because if we're not a little concerned about our performance, we'd all kind of just be really relaxed sitting around enjoying the TV or not getting off the couch. So we need to be a little anxious about our performance to get us motivated. However, at a certain point at the peak, there's a really an optimal balance between anxiety and memory. And so that sense of concern about our performance keeps us in a place that's proactive and positive and primes our performance. However, then that after that, it kind of tips off so that the increase in anxiety starts to interfere with our performance because we are so anxious about how we will perform that we become preoccupied by the anxiety and it starts to detract from our ability to do well. And you use the example of that for performance, but for some listeners who may not go on stage or perform in front of an audience or speak in front of an audience, it can also be akin to the experience of forgetting a name. So that you walk into a situation such as a reunion or a family event and you see someone where you know that you should know their name. But the more anxious you become about remembering their name, the harder it then becomes for you to remember that name. And it will come to you at 3 a.m. So it's something that you clearly have. You know that information, but you can't access it in the moment. And that's the same kind of thing. And so here you have a great example of something that happens to many of us in all walks of life that is really the interference of something in our lifestyle, this being anxiety, with our ability to recall things that we know, be it lines in a play or music or something as simple as a name. So how do we attack that, Lena? So one of the things that you come to and ask about is kind of creating an emotional connection to the information. And that is something certainly that we can take from the many schools of acting where there have been methodologies developed to enhance learning and memory. But really there are multiple modalities, many different ways in which we can attach the information to something where we can go around the anxiety. And that certainly is one. I teach many simple anxiety-reducing strategies for people to use in the moment, things as simple as counting backwards from 20, for example, to break the pattern and that connection between the anxiety and the inability to recall the information.
This is really direct connection between anxiety and memory, and you made very clear distinction in between being, so to speak, normally excited, a little bit agitated, and that creates a truly spontaneous and memorable performance. Yet there is a borderline when there is indeed panic, and that something interferes with the process of performance. And I'm sure my student will certainly question me even more on what you just commented on, because there are different modalities, as you mentioned, and I would take this as a little bridge to our perhaps a little bit more scientific research, which has to do with some life creatures like some of sea, I call it sea personalities, because squid and snails are very brainy spirits, as I relatively recently learned. And I learned also, being in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, in Cape Cod, that there is a whole museum which in great detail opens one's brain with the quality of tremendous abilities, mental abilities, which are indeed hidden in this seafood. So the joke is the more you eat seafood, the more smart you become. But of course, there is not direct connection like this. It's somewhat simplification. I personally also was surprised to learn, just reading a little bit from Nobel Prize winner Eric Kandel, that a marine snail has these abilities to have a very good memory. And I like to ask you about these scientific findings, but also to bring dietary issues like omega-3 oil, some amino acids, and what is your perhaps recommendation to be more specific to enhance our memory?
Well, you know, I mean, I think the science is ever growing and changing and interesting when it comes to memory. And, you know, certainly the animal research is very helpful in how it informs our understanding of human memory and how to not only help promote better learning and retention, but also to help in the struggle against diseases of memory, such as Alzheimer's disease. In terms of what we can do to better enhance our memory health, you know, one of the things that I like to distinguish between for my clients is the difference between doing things to improve our everyday performance and doing things to improve our overall brain health, because they're really two different constructs. So there are many different ways scientifically that we have found that we can improve both our ability to learn and remember day to day, which are really critical to our functioning and critical to our ability to live long and independent lives, and then things that we can do to promote better brain health. So the things that we can do to lower our risk for developing a memory disorder, such as Alzheimer's disease. So when you think about your brain health and the kinds of things that you can do to improve things like how well you remember names or the kinds of foods that you should be eating, what you really need to do, and I hope if the folks who are listening kind of just take one thing out of today's discussion, what you really need to think about is that in order to take good care of your brain and to function well and stay involved and vital, be it at work or at home or in your retirement, whatever it is that you're interested in doing or, you know, furthering in your career, you need to think about the totality of what you need to do to hold your brain in better health. So it's not that you need to do just one thing. It's not that you just need to go out and eat blueberries, for example, or that you need to learn a way to remember names or play games on the computer to enhance your ability to pay attention. It's not that you just need to get organized or that you need to try new intellectual pursuits. You really need to do all of these things because they all serve a different purpose in promoting better brain health. And so my approach is one I call total brain health. And the total brain health approach looks across the dimensions of body, mind, and spirit and finds activities and engages you across all of those spectrums to improve your overall brain health. Because we can't just do one thing. So, you know, the favorite thing people used to ask me about was doing crossword puzzles, right? And when I would talk to an audience and I asked what people did for their brain health, they would say they did crossword puzzles or they played Sudoku or things of that nature. And those are wonderful things, but it's simply not enough. So we really need to do things physically in terms of getting regular aerobic exercise. That's probably one of the scientifically most supported things that we can do for our brain. We need to eat well. We need to take care of ourselves in terms of the day-to-day choices we make around sleep and how kind of well we protect our heads as we exercise. We need to do those things in the physical arena, manage medications, et cetera. Then we need to look at how we engage our minds. And we need to engage our minds across both training for the skills that can be more challenged in our environment. So if we are in a workplace that's very busy or if we're challenged with a lot of memorizing lines or music, then we need to work on ways to keep those skills up to speed. We need to stretch our brains by engaging in things that are intellectually challenging and kind of cross-train our brains by doing new things all the time. And we need to learn strategies to make memorizing more manageable because we're always going to be faced in a situation with things like where we have to memorize names or remember something we were told in conversation or we read. And we, of course, always need to remember things such as appointments and things that we have to do, and we need to have strategies for managing that kind of information. And then finally, we need to look at the spiritual side of brain health, and this is kind of a growing area of research. For example, there was a study published now about 2 years ago that suggested that people who had a greater sense of purpose in their lives had a reduced risk for dementia later in life. And we also know that people who believe that they can remember better who have better what we call memory self-efficacy have an easier time learning and remembering information. That people who are socially engaged have a lower risk for dementia over their lifetime. So these are other factors that we need to consider. So really, Lena, when it comes to giving advice about steps we can take, what I really say to people is there's so much that you need to do because it's really a matter of total brain health. So the question is to look across the choices that you make day to day and figure out what it is that you're not getting enough of across this body, mind, and spiritual spectrum of brain health to help enhance your memory and your brain wellness.
Again, extremely comprehensive recommendation. I'm not sure anyone can find any kind of a tiny little missing holes. I wanted to add what you just said because this is such a bright illustration of the symbiosis of not only protection against dementia, but to keep brain as vibrant and as young as long as possible. I personally noticed that conductors having tremendously long life. And I was trying to analyze this, in fact, having workshop with my students, and I came to the understanding that it is extremely close to what you just described, because number one, they have to adapt to the brain of about 100 people, because that's what they dealing with on a daily basis, and to have this refinement and necessity, it is quite a challenging brain work.
Then yes, and actually, not to interrupt you, Lena, but I don't know if you're aware, there's actually a former conductor who has started a program that he takes into senior centers and senior communities called Conductor Size, based on that idea, and he teaches them how to conduct, and since many of them can do it seated, it's become a very popular program, which provides kind of an intellectual and physical activity at once.
So, exactly, that's what it is. It's intellectual, physical, and of course, in ideal world, it should be enjoyable.
Right, absolutely.
I noticed with the little children, which have this certain strengths and some, I don't call it weakness, but perhaps underdeveloped qualities, they also prospering in the multifunctional abilities. In fact, that's a program I deal with young children, and I don't call it special needs, I call it intuitive needs, because the child indeed tells you what he or she is missing, so you're incorporating in what is already there with what needs to be brought up and connected with the power of the energy, and is certainly something which I believe the grandparents can find in their grandchildren. When young and old meet together, it is fantastic natural combination. It's a melange where both stimulating each other in a different directions. Mm-hmm. And I like to connect this to your book because it gives very very clear recommendation. The book is so transparently written. It is wonderful transparent language, extremely well organized, and it's useful because even though you do write about certain things which we know, but the way it's written makes us feel that it is so natural for us to do. It's becoming somewhat a little extra friend, which keeps us on the line of this comprehension of understanding where and how we have to connect our money, not my money, our mind and our body. And
right.
Just since I made this mistake, I would say that if we more or less well connected between our body and mind, then we have more success to make money.
Well, you know, I appreciate you saying that about the book. And in the books that I've written, Then I have a couple out there for people who are interested in improving their memory and their brain health. I really try to keep the information simple and to give people things they can do that are easy to understand and easy to follow, because the good news about our brain health is there's probably choices that many of us make day to day that already support good brain health. So we're already doing some really, truly wonderful things for our brain. The question is, what do we need to supplement? And so one of the things I try to share with people is an easy understanding of the science and how that applies to us and what we can do. So, for example, in my most recent book, which is called 30 Days to Total Brain Health, I wrote actually the book as a blog series on my website. And in that series, what I wanted to do was to provide folks who are looking as a New Year's resolution to improve their brain health with something that they could do, that they could do in 10 minutes or less every day for January, so that they could get started on the road to brain health with some guidance for that first month of the year. And that these would be little things that they could easily kind of include in their day, but that wouldn't be overwhelming. So, you know, you gave the example of grandchildren and grandparents, so it called to my mind one of the exercises, which is to color with crayons, because many of us may not have colored something, you know, be it with crayons or colored pencils or markers in many, many years, and yet our artistic side and exploring that creative side of us is a wonderful way to give our brains a little bit of a stretch and to challenge ourselves to think out of our own box, even if it's just for 10 minutes. And it's a wonderful thing for people who have young children where, you know, often if you work and then you come home and you're doing childcare, you get so absorbed and caught up in all the different tasks that you can feel like you don't have time to improve your brain health. And this is something you can sit down and do with a child, and you can really learn from them again how to get engaged in creative play, because they're wonderful teachers to that moment. And that's something that engages your own brain then in a challenging way. So it serves many different purposes.
And in the remaining literally a few minutes, I wanted to make a comment that your work is so resourceful, literally endless, and benefits, and no wonder that you've been featured on Martha Stewart's show, on Dr. Phil's show. You've been on a major station, including SNBC, and that is your unique purpose. You are for an individual who is leading perhaps his or her modest personal life, but you're also so valuable for the society where stress today is indeed needs your book, needs your wisdom, and needs your future research. Dr. Green, I wanted to thank you very, very much. And as I said, I will be cautiously presumptuous, but I hope it's just a chapter one to our discussion, because it's very hard to find more relevant subject than our brain with most precious quality we have, which is a memory. So I wanted to thank you so much for finding time, and we're just very much looking forward for the next chapter to meet with you on the air.
Thank you, Lena, and it's been my absolute pleasure to be with you and your listeners on the show today, and I do look forward to joining you again.
Thank you so much. I will continue on my post words, and I will just say that that was another very interesting program, not only because it is about our brain and about our memory, but because it did inform us how indeed we can not only preserve ourselves, but to have very fruitful, long life with our mind, with our brain, with our memory, which is such a tremendous source of our connections. I will take a little pause here, and then after this, we will continue on my own post thoughts regarding this very unique program we had with Dr. Cynthia Green, who helped us to make a more of internal peace with ourselves and to preserve and actually to develop our personal memories to the maximum. Also, tell us why and what will be involved in succeeding to preserve and treasure our memory. So I will take a little break, and then after this, we will continue on my post thoughts. And like to talk a little bit about history of a memory. That's somewhat a funny sound subject, how memory can have a history. But this is my own way to bring another quality, another magnitude to the quality of the memory. Because without the memory, we will not remember history. And we're reading certain information about history which took place many, many centuries ago. And then we combining this with what we know and with combining with what we think we know. So we're talking about reality and imagination. And also our memory has a quality of the interpretation. So actually, memory is not just a factual, obviously not only a factual mechanism. It's not only a short and long quality of the memories. And also, it is not just what we want to remember. It calls for what we do remember, whether we want it or not. So we really trying to search and optimize our memory, and we are becoming quite scrupulous in selection what we want to remember and what we don't want to remember. And sometimes instinctive memory can hold inside tremendous fearful emotional message, and that can be negative or positive, but sometimes it can be extremely protective. We do have, obviously, memory which was instilled in us in our childhood, and that's something which I hope to discuss next time with Dr. Green, and ask how we can make a loop of our memory points from the childhood to our adulthood, and how this memory shapes our personal transformation. I hope that the message which Dr. Green was trying to share with us give us indeed some peace of mind and give us a good memory about this program, because indeed her comprehensive description of the qualities of the memory should give us tremendous sense of security, because if one component of memory perhaps is not functioning properly, the other one comes to rescue. I gave a lot of thoughts, for example, in performance and how memory should be automatic for performing art field. But memories actually can get in without our noticing this. We remember tastes, we remember lights, we remember obviously physical experiences. And the last thought which I like to express is the fact that our memory now has its very challenging twist, because we are on the computers. We are in some ways depriving our memories of its nature function, because we are depending on a reminder from the computer, from the iPhone, from the telephone. So this digital technology often takes place of our memory instead of just serving a convenience for the memory. So one needs to be very alert, especially regarding children, where a child forgot how to keep a pencil in her or his hand. The physical memory of a contact between the pencil and the paper is critically important, and it is somewhat dissipating in our times. I believe that one of the reasons for our well-noticed educational issues is because we're losing this very natural memory in abilities to have a physical connection with book we are holding in our hands, newspaper for child, as I mentioned, pencils, contacting with a paper. But the most important, it is that a comprehensive connection, which Dr. Green mentioned and explored so fully. So I would certainly finish this program with a reminding that our memory needs to be nourished, that our memory has this vitamin of our spiritual connection, when if we want to do something, we should follow through in every possible level, from mental, emotional, and physiological. And on this note, I wanted to thank you, all of you, and until next time, that was Lena Live with your friend Lena Mirmont. Until then.